Level up with Dr. Leyland.
Step into the future, the world is waiting now. Dreams are in the making, we'll show you how. From the books to the screen, from the stage to the stars. Level up your game, let's raise the bar. Innovation, inspiration, it's in our DNA. Breaking through the limits, we're paving the way. Level up, reach the sky, take the lead, don't be shy. Your story's worth it, your light will shine. At Level Up will be heard, building a legacy with every word. From podcasts to pages, from business to art, Level Up's the place where it all can start. With heart and with vision, we're chasing every goal. Together we'll ignite the fire in your soul. Level up, reach the sky, take the lead. Don't be shy, your story's worth it, your light will shine. At Level Up Academy, it's your time. Oh, it's your time. At Level Up Academy, we rise and climb.
Look at that. Yes, we have Troy Carnes today. Amazing brother from another mister. But first, we're going to go to my sponsors. We have Influencing You. This is a platform for all global influencers. I believe you have to have at least minimum 25,000 followers or up in one of your influencing platform. So I am part of their teaching moment. So I usually do Fridays at 10 a.m. PST, where I actually will teach you the ins and outs. And of course, I always get freebies every time I teach a course in terms of whatever the topic is. But it's always social media. It's always social media marketing. So if you wanted to learn for your business, let me know. I will be happy to walk you through it. Then another thing is Bella Grace is one of my sponsors as well. And they are all about making your inside and outside beautiful. So that elixir right there that you see on the left side, right after Scan Me, is actually something for the inside. So as I grow older, I want to make sure I'm very cognizant of what I put on my body. I get a lot of allergies. And that one actually has been tested and in, I believe, 80 clinical trials. And they make sure that whatever you're taking is from the Amazon, whatever you're taking is good for your body. And I swear by it. I feel like I'm getting younger just drinking it. Maybe it is a subliminal images in my head. Maybe I want it to work so bad. But I guarantee you the pain that I have in my scoliosis I have for ever since I was a teenager, it has subsided. My knee doesn't hurt as much either. I've been taking this for about a month now. And then their lip balm serum actually It looks like you have lip injections. I've never had lip injections, but I wanted to, and my husband's like, leave it alone. Forget it. Don't worry about it. So I just, okay, fine. I'll just draw my lips. And I put this up and actually it looks like that. And men sometimes don't realize like this is what we want, not for anything else, but for us, right? And so I don't have to do that because this will help me. The other one is actually, this is made in Korea. So you guys already know that Korea is like the best innovative products out there. So I have the collagen and also have the serum. The serum is almost like a glowy highlighter. So if you see those glass skin people, that is what the formula is on this one. And I love it. Also, we're going to have a summit soon, guys, for our academic publishing. It does end this Friday. This is going to be every 2 years. I don't do academic publishing. It's pretty intense program. So I don't do it only once every 2 years or maybe 3 years. And this time, last time I did it was 2022. So it's been 3 years. So you basically get one manuscript, which is English, and you have to have a master's degree minimum in any area or genre or any focus that you have. However, you will be writing about 5,000 to 10,000 words, and you will have a summit around April, and then our manuscript is going to be done in May, and then we wait until the publisher. I'm not the publisher on this one. It is a German publishing for academics. It goes to our universities everywhere in the 61 countries that they have, including Japan and China. And I said including is because those two countries, they don't just push any book, period. They filter everything. And that's why it's pretty intense to make sure that you guys get the structure. And I got the structure. I've been doing this for a while. And so that is what's happening. And I invite you guys to join our summit. It's free. And we're going to give you what our research has actually showed. So we have mental health on here. We have mentorship, belonging, also disability. So it will be an interesting conversation. And public policy and healthcare is also one of the research that's happening. And of course, the Chronicles of Scattered Pages is coming out this month at the end. So keep an eye on that one. And this is the first anthology that I have that I don't have any theme. And we do have anthologies every 3 months. So March is next. March is now. And then June is our next anthology. And so right now, it's so cute. I actually wrote about my English bulldog named Cheerio. I have two. Maybe I will do Duke next time. But if you hear him loud right now, that's Duke. Cheerio's not here next to me yet. She's pouting downstairs because I didn't want to carry her 45 pounds upstairs. So no. Then, of course, Mike to Millions. If you ever want to do podcasting, this is the book that you want to get. I will do the version 2 this year around July. Probably I'll write it again or September. But this is more of a journal. But it has a pointed question to help you get going with your podcast. I also have a podcast group, very small, invite only. Once every month, and it's the first Tuesday of every month where I actually help you get your podcast going. Last Tuesday, we just talked about how to monetize your podcast. So if you missed that, you missed it. Next month, I'm not sure if I'm going to do monetization, but definitely, I created an AI just for podcasters in my group or maybe to sell it soon. So this is the book for you. Of course, House of Business Community. Look at our fearless leader in his goofy hat, Mike Asherbenner. And so if you are curious what HOB is, please come and join us. Last but not least is my dear sister, Susanna, my also co-publisher on all of our anthologies together. She is a speaker, an author. She's actually an Osma award-winning writer and also has her solo books, and she has anthologies with me. And she is an amazing person for corporate speaking and corporate training on belonging and productivity for your employees. Disrupt and Dominate magazine. Again, this Friday is also the last day, and it will come out the end of this March. A lot of March coming out, okay? And Level Up Circle magazine actually is physical and also online. And we're growing our followership on the magazine online. So we are really doing amazing things in there. And then you also will be featured in our Instagram. Okay, I think that was done. But you guys know, right? March March 8th, this Sunday, actually, is International Women's Day. So I wanted to actually share something with you guys. Let me see if I can share a specific window because my screen is going to be so small. Let me see if I can do this one. Yes, you guys see it? Not yet, right? So let's take a look. Can you guys see it? Yeah, I think you can. Let's go ahead and make this bigger and play.
Here's to the women, bold and strong, lifting each other.
My name is Kendall. Happy International Women's Day.
I'm Susanna Dawn, wishing all my sisters a beautiful and lovely International Women's Day.
I'm Danielle Manalis. Happy International Women's Day.
Hello, my name is Noriko Whitfield. Today, we celebrate the strength, wisdom, and resilience of women everywhere. Happy International Women's Day.
Hello, I'm April Wyatt, and I am sending love out to all the women for International Women's Day. Yes, let's expand this across the globe.
Hi, my name is Lisa Favek. I'm a menopause dietitian and coach, and I just wanted to wish all women a happy International Women's Day.
Hello, everyone. My name is Linda Meyer, and in honor of celebrating women's achievements, I'm wishing you all a very happy International Women's Day.
Hi guys, this is Dr. Leland coming to you from Level Up Academy. Happy International Women's Day. Today, as we celebrate, I want to go back and actually review how it started, IWD. 1900s, four countries, Austria, Denmark, Switzerland, and also Germany, basically made a movement for labor movement for women for equal pay. Now, the origins of it really, well, in 1975, United Nations adopted it, but in 1908, 15,000 women marched in New York to protest working conditions, pay, and voting rights. And then in 1909, a socialist party in America literally saying, hey, this is the first National Women's Day in New York City. And in 1910, Clara Zetkin, a German advocate, okay, for women's rights, proposed an annual International Women's Day, and that's how we celebrate IWD, as in today. So thanks to her and all the women before her.
Yes, yes, thanks to her and all the women before her. So thank you guys so much. But we're going to stop talking about anything else because we have an amazing guest and we want to learn. We always want to learn, right? Let's bring in Troy. Yay.
I love the moves.
Level up. It's time to rise.
Oh my gosh. Okay. 607 people in YouTube watching us already. So let's go. First of all, let me ask, who is Troy Carnes?
Are you asking me?
Yes, well, who are you?
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess in short, I'm a husband, father, author, recovering alcoholic, cancer survivor. Did I say writer? I do that too. You know, and just general good vibes guy.
I love that. I love the optimism that you bring in and breathe life in people who likes to complain and have a pity party about, oh, I got a paper cut on my finger like Mike always does, right? Like, wah, whining. And I was actually thinking about that this morning, you know, like, wow, there's other people out there who's actually really, really have issues. And here we are complaining about little things here and there, right? And I want to know, like, I know we only see the outcome. We only see you today, but I want to go back a little bit on how you got here today, wherever you want to start in your timeline.
Wherever I want to start. Okay, well, so here's kind of a story of how things unraveled for me, at least, right? So my wife and I, we take our kids out. It's summer of 2021. we go play in the river, we're splashing around, it's great. And then one of my kids throws this fit, right? It's like massive, like King Kong style, like fists pounding on the ground. I'm like, you know, like he was four or something, and it's fine. Like kids throw fits, like no, it shouldn't be a big deal, right? Except this one, he threw in the middle of the street, like in a crosswalk. And I was like, ah, so I go and I just scoop him up. Like there's no time for negotiating, right? Like, hey, stand up, come here. No. Right? So I scoop him up and I feel like my shoulder buckle a little bit or give way and I don't hear a pop and I don't hear a snap, but it's more like a crackle, right? And then I think to myself, like, you know, I do one of these moves, I circle my arm and I say, ah, getting old sucks, right? It's like the thing that like all like mid-30s guys say at some point, and women too, I'm sure, like, oh, getting old sucks. And I don't think anything of it. Like, it goes away in 2 weeks, I'm feeling fine. And then a year later, I'm like lifting weights and I feel the same thing, right? And I say, ah, you know, today, like, I gotta take care of it this time. Like, let me go figure it out. Maybe I need physical therapy. Maybe I need rotator cuff surgery. Like I have no idea. So I go to the orthopedic guy. He takes my x-ray. He says, oh, you need an MRI. I say, yeah, okay. We go to get an MRI. And then he calls me that night at 5:30. And he says, I am not the doctor for you, man. You need the guy who deals with rare orthopedic tumors. And I'm like, send me to that guy. And he says, okay, I'll call you tomorrow. Right. I'll call you tomorrow. I have two people in mind. Let me do some digging and I'll refer you to somebody in the morning. And at that point, I'm like, oh my gosh, like how many cocktails would you need to, you know, calm down and like have a night, like a relaxed night or get to sleep after knowing that you have this tumor and that it's rare and whatever, right? Like, but the problem was on that day, I also had 98 days of sobriety. I was supposed to graduate from rehab that week. So cocktail, not an option, right? And luckily, I had spent those 98 days in rehab putting together a system that kept me sane and sober through what ultimately ended up being, my surgeon called, a big, scary, dangerous, rare cancer. It's like cancer bingo. And here I am. I'm like, you know, 1,393 days sober now, and my cancer, you know, they cut it out of me 3.5 years ago. So that's, and now I'm here with you. It's amazing.
I love it. You know, it never gets old when people tell me about their journey and their cancer journey, because I'm sure in that moment, you had a moment of the why, like why? I saw this young lady, young lady, probably in her 20s, and she's a mom, and she's had cancer for the last 3 years ago, and she just passed away. It's brutal. It's just brutal. You know, you ask, why me? And the answer is, why not you? What makes you special, right? And I think it goes back to choices. And that's when I want to kind of dive in, because you have a book that basically helps us, helps me and you, whoever you are out there, yeah. 630 yeah. of you in YouTube watching, reflect on life and what is good, what is not serving you. I don't think there's anything, I mean, yes, there is something that's bad, like alcohol, drugs, and all those things, right? But in terms of experience, it's an experience, period. And I think we filter bad and good and indifferent, and you know, if it's not giving us dopamine and happy mode, it's a bad thing. It's a journey that you have to go through, right? So can you talk a little bit about what's in the book?
Yeah, so the book has three things in it, right? There's stories, science, and systems. and it walks through a framework that I found really helpful. And I stumbled across this framework, or I should say it was taught to me, because the statistics on people who make it a year without drinking when they try to get sober are not great. You know, there are lots of stats, depends on the one you look at, but you know, safely you can say 2/3 don't make it a year without relapsing. And I asked my therapist, I said, well, how do people mess this up so much? Right. And she said, well, people don't make good decisions when they're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Halt. And I said, that's terrifying, right? Because those are feelings that we have every day because we're humans. And so it's no wonder that people have a hard time staying sober. It's like, those are the things you got to watch out for. Like, there's no avoiding those, right? Because in my mind, I was like, okay, well, let's just see what people, like how people mess this up and then avoid doing those things. But like, you can't avoid any of those things. And so I was bummed out for a day or two. And then I thought, well, and I got bummed out because it felt like it was going to take a lot of willpower, you know, to like in a moment when I'm not feeling great to say, okay, like run through that list. Like, am I hungry? Am I angry? And then to make a good decision instead of a bad decision, like that seemed like a lot of willpower. And CJ, I did not make it to rehab by having good willpower, right? So I thought, well, there's something there though. Like, this framework is simple to understand. And if I get proactive about these things and nurture them instead of trying to fix them, like that's what I wanted. I wanted to go into rehab and get fixes and solutions. And then I ran into a bunch of issues that don't have solutions inherently, right? Like, there's no fix. There's no fix for any of it. These are the things that we're going to deal with all the time. And so I thought, well, if I can get proactive about those things and set up my life so that I'm eating in a way that like I'm not getting so starving that I'm making bad decisions, or that I'm not stuffing my emotions until I explode, or, you know, I'm not secluding myself and getting lonely. If I could get ahead of all of those things, then I might get a shot, right? And that was my goal when I set this thing up. And little did I know how much I was going to need it until I got that diagnosis.
You see, in the moment of your adversity is when you make two decisions, pity party or move on. It's easy, right? But when you're in that moment, it's hard. I had cancer in 2011, and that was not fun. I wanted to just like crawl up in the cave and said, okay, I guess this is, you know, it. But if it comes back, it comes back. I don't have any control over it. The only control I have is the decision and the moment that I'm going to take, whatever that is, right? When you're told, hey, you got 8 months to live, and that these are your options. Not much, really. There's not much options. It's either you take it out and hope and pray that we take all of it out, because there's some cancers you can't take all of it out.
Right.
One of my husband's best friend right now, his brother's going through that. And so his brain had cancer and it's stuck in there, and they take the foundation, but the roots are still there. Like, you can't, there's no cure, right? Then you have guilt. So how do you do this? Well, you're not actually living for yourself at the moment. You're actually thinking about my family. What about my kids? I think what I was thinking is, okay, my thoughts was a little bit selfish, maybe. But maybe if moms, I would love to ask some moms who have gone through cancers, right? And you have little children. The first thing that got thoughts like, I will be damned if another woman is going to raise my kids. Like, that was my thought. Like, where's those children? And I was dying on the first one. Like, that was the first thought. I was like, okay, wow. CJ, like, maybe you should live. Yeah, I'm going to live for this, just this reason, you know? It's funny, but it's not funny at the moment. I'm like, another woman's going to raise my children? What? No, I'm not even going to see them when I grow up. No, like, I was arguing with myself.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not funny at the time, but now you tell it well.
It is funny now. But what was your thoughts when you were given that and you see your children and your wife, and what was going through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, there was a point of time when my range of outcomes were pretty big, right? Before the official diagnosis, it was like, maybe this is benign, you take a pill or whatever, or you die, right? Once I got the diagnosis and my surgeon said, well, we can take this out. We can cut it out. And I feel pretty good about that. Yeah, it was, you nailed it. It was all about the kids. I thought about, I tell the story a lot, but I talk about the like mourning the games of catch that I wasn't going to play anymore. Right. Because like it's in my right shoulder. I can't, you know, I can't pick my arm up over my head. And I just thought about, the first thoughts were all about the things that I wasn't going to be able to do, right? You have this quintessential like father, son catch in the backyard. And I was like, well, that's out now. But I married a good woman and she said, well, yeah, okay, you won't do that. But like everything will just look different, right? You'll throw underhand. You'll do, what are you doing when you're playing catch anyway, right? You're just bonding with your kids. So you'll find other ways to do that. And the important thing is that you will be here to figure it out. And I said, God, I'm glad you're around. I'm going to keep you around because
you're a keeper.
That's pretty good advice. Yeah, exactly. Oh,
wow. Okay. I love that because, you know, at that time when I found out my husband was working, maybe I only see him twice a month. And I was with the little kids and it was difficult. And he actually found out and he came home. And I mean, we lived in DC a little bit, like Northern Virginia at that time. And he was in the Navy Yard all the time. And he's like, okay, you know, this project can wait. Like, this is more important than anything else. It's been difficult because we didn't have any family. My family was here in San Diego. We were in the East Coast. He had no family in there. All of our family and friends are in San Diego. So we were alone, and during surgery, he would just take the kids with him, you know, wait in the hospital. And I could see the kids' face, like, Mom, are you going to be okay? I'm like, I'm here. I still need to spank you for what you did the other day. Don't worry. You know, like that was my thought.
Yeah.
I was just making sure that it was normal for them as much as possible. But I really didn't know if it's going to happen or not. But I think we got it. Yeah. We caught it early. And that's what I want people to know. Like, it's not like you're on a radar, like, oh my God, I have cancer. Like, I just, you know, it's not that. Sometimes you actually have symptoms that you put out. I had some. I don't know if you had any. Pay attention to your body is what I'm going to say, right? Because you will have some of those symptoms that is not normal, but you're like, I'm just tired. I'm just really, you know, because I don't know why. I had kids, so my kids running around all the time. So I was like, man, I'm so exhausted. And I would take long naps all the time. Mm-hmm. And I would have like pain in my left side. I'm like, oh, maybe because I was running and it's just painful. Like I would make excuses for all the symptoms until I had to go get checked because I was like, okay, I'm in like so much pain. I don't understand. I don't think that's normal anymore. And then they're like, yeah, no, it's not normal, right? Healthcare also is bad because it takes forever to get your results. I was lucky that I was in Virginia where emergency, there's no line. In California, it's 6 hours. What are your thoughts on that, Troy? Like, did you have symptoms that you feel that you're making excuses? Like, yeah, it's okay.
100%. Like I just said, for a year, I just said getting old sucks, right? Like, oh, I'm just getting old. I'm like, you know, I'm in my 30s now, so I'm just getting old. And it's like, no, you're not getting old. You have cancer. Like, and you're right. Like when doctors can catch it early, they can do something about it, right? And so I tell people this all the time, like, just go get checked out. What's probably going to happen is that you don't have cancer bingo and they're going to tell you that you're old. And that's amazing. That'll be the best news that you get all day, right? So that's step one. Step two, the healthcare question. You know, I was like stage three and my medical team was very concerned that my cancer had either spread already or that it was about to because of the size and how aggressive it was. So they moved very fast. I mean, I got the x-ray, the guy said, you need an MRI and I want it to happen now. He said, I'm going to mark it as an emergency so the insurance company doesn't slow us down. But it's no big deal, he said to me. And I said, okay. And this was 2021, right? So I thought, okay, maybe they're trying to get everybody through the system during the summer before we have COVID in the winter. But then, I mean, he got my MRIs. He texted them to my rad surgeon who was on vacation and said, I want you in my office first thing next week when I'm back. I got the first appointment of the day. Had a biopsy immediately following that. Diagnosis came and I was in surgery in 2 weeks. Like they moved very, very fast for me. But I do have a friend who got a cancer diagnosis this summer who told me about his experience. And he said, yeah, he went in lethargic, everything else. And everybody told him not to worry about it. And he had to fight and fight and fight to get his blood work looked at. And then all of a sudden he's in the Mayo Clinic and everything. He's fine now. But yeah, it's not great, especially if you're young, because it's not necessarily the first thing that doctors think about, right? But I'm like, there are many friends that I have who have had cancer, fighting it, whatever. Some passed away very sadly, and it's happening younger and younger.
Yeah, I have a friend. She was 41. She died of cancer as well. But I had it in my 30s. I actually was telling my husband, I'm like, oh, I better get checked. I haven't been checked since COVID, so it's been 5 years. I'm supposed to check twice a year. CJ hasn't done it in 5 years. And I'm like, I'm being selfish right now, actually. I hate the healthcare system here. It's like doctors, I hate it. You know why? You make an appointment. You're there 10 minutes early and then they're 30 minutes late. But if you're 5 minutes late, they'll cancel your appointment that you waited 6 months ago. How is that even possible? Like, what makes your time better than my time? Not everybody's just doing nothing at home. Okay. When I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years, I was exhausted. Left here, right here. Like, I was a cook, Uber, everything else. Like, okay, no.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I think healthcare system needs a revamp, just like education needs a revamp for sure. But what we can't control, we can't do nothing about. What I want you guys to do is take control of yourself. If you feel that there's something wrong, get it checked, period. And don't stop until you figure it out. Some doctors are just literally reading a checklist in their book of the symptoms that you're giving them. And then they guess, oh, it must be this. Or they do like a million testing and still can't figure out what's wrong with you for building your insurance money. I hate that too, right? But we're talking about HALT. And I want to go back to that because all of these actually goes back to that. How did you find HALT in terms of helping you grow and stay optimistic despite all of that, like activities and you know, all the, I'm sure you had some drama going up and down during this time. I'm sure of it. Right? How did you survive using HALT?
Yeah. Well, as I started thinking about why HALT makes so much sense, you know, I thought about it like this, and it kind of fits on a grid or like a 2x2 matrix, right? Because a lot of our problems are like physical or emotional, right? And then they're either internal or external, and HALT fits on that grid. So if you think about your problems that are physical and internal, that's like usually hungry, right? Like it's hard to think of a sensation that is more internal and physical than that. And, you know, I was a guy who like never ate breakfast, right? I was like, I don't have time for that. I'm not hungry in the morning. I'm not whatever. People say it's the most important meal of the day. Fooey, you know, like whatever. But what you eat affects your mood and everything else so much. And I started changing the way that I ate and I started feeling better in my body, but feeling better emotionally as well. And so I just, you know, I went through a ton of different kinds of breakfasts and whatever. And I, you know, I really settled on like, I need fiber and protein, like kind of as much as possible. And then way less sugar. And that's not just, you know, not just candy sugar, but like carbs too. But when you're talking about like optimism, one of the ways that really helped me do that was thinking about like the good things that I was going to get to eat and not thinking about the things I was losing. And I think this goes not just for diet, but for everything else, right? And it, like, you know, following this helped me, like I lost 50 pounds. I was obese. And somebody said to me, I had an interesting conversation. He's like, oh man, I could never like cut carbs out or something. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like I eat like a lot of grilled meat and vegetables. And you know, it's delicious, like grilled meat and vegetables. And he's like, well, yeah, I guess so. And I'm like, yeah, I still eat all this awesome stuff. And I'm just feeling so much better now. So, I tell people like your food and your mood are tangled up tighter than a ball of yarn that a kitten's had for an hour, you know? And you're never going to extract those things. And, you know, we talk about being hangry all the time. And it's super true, right? It's 56% of your like anger can be attributed to your hunger.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have hypoglycemia. I don't know if you, okay. So it's low blood sugar, right? And people are like, are you diabetic? I'm like, no, but I do have family who have like genetics and that. So I always carry candies or mints or things like that. But orange juice is the best. When you have hypoglycemia, drink that orange juice right away. Not even candy, mm-hmm. like orange juice. I fainted several times during when I was younger. That's also bad because you're not going to die from the faint. You're going to die from the head injury that you'll have if you faint anywhere else. Yeah. Or if you're driving. Like I had one time I was driving and it just hit on me. And I'm like, So I had to go really quickly to the right and find a restaurant or anything. But then, you know, everything. So you have to go to go. And hopefully there's no long line or you'll faint in the middle of that line. It's not fun. So I made it, got the orange juice. I'm like, just give me sugar. And they're like, what? I'm like, just give me sugar. I have hypoglycemic, low blood sugar. And they're like literally throwing stuff at me. And I didn't even pay. I was just eating. And I'm like, okay, here's your pay. Because I needed it. I was sweating bullets. Like I could feel it in my body just warmed up. And it's the worst thing ever, right? And so your cognitive impairment, you know, mood changes and poor decision making because you're like, I just need food. Like some buffoon, like CJ, calm down. I'm like, no, I can't. And my dad has it. I think my daughters have them too. And I was like, great. If anything I had to give them is that, you know? So I have a question.
Yeah.
How have hunger, anger, loneliness, and exhaustion influenced a decision you made? And what did you learn from that experience?
So I think there's a couple of interesting things in there that I want to talk about. First is like a single decision, you know, like, yeah, if I'm feeling super hungry or I'm really mad, you know, I just try to kick decisions down the road until I feel like I'm in a good place to make them. But because I'm trying to be a little bit more proactive than those things, and I'm trying to put myself in a position where I can just be okay most of the time, right? And what that looks like is a lot of journaling, like every single day, you know, for like the last 1300 days or whatever. And that helps a lot of decision making because, you know, I think that we make bad decisions because we're not thinking clearly about what's happening in our own minds. And that's true for decisions for ourselves. It's true for conflict in our relationships. I'm convinced that most conflicts stem from miscommunication, not malice. And a lot of that is because we don't understand our own point of view. And so I get a lot of that out by writing. And I think I shared with you once before, the reason why writing helps us think better and helps us make better decisions. And there's a great book called Chatter. It's by Ethan Cross. He's a psychologist at the University of Michigan. And he opens that book by explaining we can think 4,000 words per minute to ourselves, which is like, here, let me, you want to do an experiment? Okay, let's do it. Okay. So I'm going to open my podcast app. Like, you know, we got Simon Sinek here. Okay. Can you? All right. That was 3.5 speed. That's like 400 words a minute. 437 words a minute, maybe. And did you understand anything? Okay. So we think 4,000. That's 400, right? But you speak at like 125 or 130 words a minute, much slower. You type at 40 words a minute, 60 if you're super fast. And if you're writing by hand, it's like 13. So it's a snail's pace, right? Yeah. And there's another professor at the University of Austin, or University of Texas in Austin, James Pennebaker, and he talks about the magic that happens when you translate your thoughts to language, when you have to explain things, right? And so we just listened to Simon Sinek talk 400 words a minute. We didn't understand a single thing, right? But if we slow it down to one speed, right, then we can understand him. And the same works for our thoughts. And so that's why I write every day. And if I'm having trouble with decisions, I write about them. Or if I'm having trouble in a relationship, I write about the conflict, because then I can understand where I'm coming from. And if I understand where I am, I'm much better off to make good decisions, repair relationships that might be ruptured in the moment. And so there's like one decision, there's a million of them. Every decision that I make, I'm better off if I'm centered myself.
Yeah, I like that. I usually, if I have to make a decision that I know I can feel it in my gut, it's going to affect something big, I sleep on it. Mm-hmm. And then I do write the pros and cons. Like, okay, what is the pro of keeping this person in my life? And what is the con? And I don't even think twice. If I see more con than pro, I don't even think twice. I said, okay, time to get rid of the person, period. It's because if they're not adding to your life, spicy friendship is okay. Like having spicy friends, it's fine, you know. But having conflict that's just always tense, I don't like that. I like debate. I like debate. I love conflict. Conflict is good, by the way, for you. Because everybody shouldn't agree with you. Otherwise, we won't innovate. Like, we can't innovate if we agree on everything. And it's funny that you say about language, because English is my seventh language, right? So I have to really calculate the words and what I'm going to say and if it makes sense. And, you know, and I can switch my language quickly depending on who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, and my girlfriend said, CJ, your hair is as much as your language, you're changing. And I was like, you should stop coloring your hair. I'm like, girl, this is wig. I got tons of them. Okay, let's go. For the longest time, for the last 5 years, I haven't colored my hair. But since I was 16, I was always been blonde, red. Like, this is like my natural hair. I could color it this way. But perimenopause is hitting. You know, it's real. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're closer to 50, and I keep pinching myself. I'm like, dude, you're going to be 50. Like, what are you doing? You know, like, I was like, okay, well, whatever. I feel like I'm 15. I'm fine. Like, and I did. I look at my kids. I'm like, oh my God, she's 21 this year. Yep, I am getting older. I gotta accept that fact. But
yeah,
I really think that halt in what you're doing really makes a difference if you really think about it, right? Like, when I'm angry because I'm like hungry, I can't think straight. Like, don't talk to me. I like my coffee first thing in the morning. Like, my kids know if I haven't had coffee, don't talk to me. So what they do is they make coffee, offer it to me. Then they're like, mom, can I go to somebody's house? I'm like, and then I just sip my coffee and they're like, can I go now? I'm like, I just keep drinking my coffee and I'm like, okay, are you good, mom? I'm like, yeah. So I always make breakfast Saturday and Sunday because Monday to Friday is super busy in my house. Right. And no one really eats a breakfast, but we do have yogurt and so they can take it to go. And I like to put nuts in them and blueberries. And I also realized, like, I'm Asian. I like to eat rice, but I cannot eat rice every day.
Mm-hmm.
I notice I'm sluggish. And then because I work like maybe 15 hours a day in the computer, maybe more,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing mommy floaties. I'm like, where did this come from? And my husband's like, well, if you're sitting down, where do you think it's going to go? I'm like, oh, so I need to really get up and exercise. And loneliness. Let me ask you something. I think if we have a barometer for loneliness, I think during COVID and now even still after COVID, there's more people who are lonely, even though we're more connected. What do you think?
A 1,000,000%. This part of the book scared the crap out of me. It was the most sobering section that I wrote because I didn't realize the consequences and the impact that loneliness can have on us and how it's getting much, much worse. So here's an example. In like 1990, only 27% of people had fewer than three good friends, right? Somebody who you could call a confidant, right? Now, half of us don't have three friends. We'll go even further. Being loneliness will kill you. And there's a study out of BYU, and there are three tiers to this. One, if you feel lonely, right? This means if you don't have as many social connections as you would like to have. So it's subjective. But if you're feeling lonely, you're mortality rate goes up 26%. If you are socially isolated, and that's the objective number of social connections you have, that number is 29%. And if you live alone, it's 32%. So loneliness is awful. And there are lots of not just emotional, but physical side effects that come with it that will make your life shorter. Okay. It's really sobering. Okay. And then you look at the statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics on how we spend our time and who we spend our time with, right? When we're young, we spend a lot of time with our friends. Yes. When we hit 24, we spend less time with our friends than we do alone, with our family, with our coworkers. It's just the lowest. It's the lowest relationship that we have. But they're also incredibly impactful because the friends that you do what your friends do, right? So if your friends hike, you hike. If your friends binge drink, then you binge drink, right? Like your friends are a pretty big indicator of what you like to do as well. So they are the most efficient relationship that you have in your life are your friends. And so here's a thing that everybody can take away. Just call somebody today. I started just calling somebody once a day. And it is like the most dopamine. You talked about dopamine before. It's the most dopamine that you'll get all day if you just call somebody to say hello. But we don't do it for a couple lame reasons, right? One, we think we don't have time. You have 10 minutes.
You're too busy.
Like, lots of statistics out there showing how much more productive and efficient you're going to be if you take a 10-minute break. So take a 10-minute break and call one of your friends just to say hello, okay? Or people sit in traffic, call somebody in traffic. Like, you have 10 minutes, right? You're listening to a podcast or you're listening to music instead, call somebody, okay? Or they say, ooh, it's going to be super awkward. Like, I'm not sure what to say, or like, I don't want to bother them. Listen, your friends will never be bothered if you're calling them to say hello. If you're always calling your friends because you want something from them, maybe that's different. Or you're calling them to say all the time, maybe that's it. But like, listen, like, you're friends with these people. They want to talk to you. Just call them. So you're not bothering them. And then they think, oh, maybe it's going to be awkward. And so I have a you know, you can think this is a very old, very dependable framework to just get a conversation started, and it's four, right? So you ask them about their family, their occupation, their recreation, or their dreams. Ford. Super dependable. It works every time. But guess what? You're not going to need it. Once you get 7 seconds into this conversation, you'll just start talking because they're your friends, right?
Yeah.
And what are we? We're like in a social media first world or a text first world. But, you know, social media is like the potato chip of connection, right? Like, you know, like you can't just eat one, right? Like, you know why? Because they're not satisfying. Because it's not satisfying. Right? It's like you get a quick thing of dopamine and then it's gone, right? Like calling your friend is like having like a ribeye. It's satisfying. It's really great. So that is the thing that everybody can do. Now, if you're also thinking, oh, I don't know who I would call. I hear this excuse too. I don't know who I would call.
You can call Troy.
Call me. Listen, I'll talk to anybody. I'll talk to anybody. But here's the thing that I suggested that people do is you just like scroll through your phone, right? And I made a group that's my keep in touch group, right? So just scroll through your phone. And if you're thinking like, oh, I wonder what they're up to, add them to the group, right? And then all you do is you look in that group when you have 10 minutes, you scroll through, just randomly push the button, call somebody. Just call somebody on the list. You've already pre-selected them as somebody you like. Now you don't have to think about it. Whoa, what am I going to talk to him? But just call and say hello. Just call and say hello.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I wanted to go back real quick before we end because we do have to end. And I want to ask everybody, Troy Carnes out there that you see, that's his actually the book. If you guys want to order the book, it's coming out in May, right? Is it coming out in May or June?
One of those. It just went to the copy editor. It went to the copy editor. We'll see how many mistakes I made, but no, it should be like end of May or early June. I'll have the copies.
We'll have the QR codes for you guys as soon as the book, but you can pre-order it now. It is in the works. And then also go ahead and subscribe to his Substack newsletter because he talks about HALT and what we're discussing today, the ins and outs. We're really doing that. I wanted to go back to the notable research that you were talking about the initiatives. An English longitudinal study of aging from ELSA, really. I'm doing research right now, but it's about mentorship and it's part of that. It's literally an ongoing study on multidisciplinary for data representative sample of English populations of 50 and older. And they said that the highlighted that loneliness rather than social isolation is a predictor of developing dementia and the importance of subjective social connections. The other one we were talking about, it's called Julian HALT Lundstedt research. That's the one that he's a psychologist and a neurologist. And basically his work demonstrated that poor social support is linked to increase in mortality. Okay.
That's the study I was talking about. Yeah.
And this literally strong relationship. And it's funny that you actually say like three, cause I do have more than three that I call all the time. Mike, definitely. We talk pretty much every day, twice a day. And then, you know, Susanna and Danielle. And then sometimes I talk to Shanda and some random people like every day. I do have online friends that I talk to every day. And then I have physical friends that I meet up that I talk at least twice a week. Because it's important to me that we keep that. Like sometimes we get eaten by online friendships, but not physical friendships. Like it's important to actually be with someone physically, get a hug, get a kiss, get a bump, you know, like get a dancing going on. Like,
love the dance.
Right? Yeah. Like, oh, you make a fool of yourself. I'm like, okay, why don't you make a fool out of yourself right now? Instead of laughing at me, laugh with me. Like,
join me. You know? Join me.
If we invite you guys, right here is the QR code. Any last message for anybody that listens this or team replay right now? We still have 547 people watching us towards the end of our show.
Yeah. So I guess one of the biggest messages of HALT is that I don't think your life is broken and you don't need to fix it, right? You're worth nurturing. Because all of these issues that we're talking about, right, being hungry, dealing with your emotions, managing your relationships and then your energy, which is sleep and exercise, all super important. None of that is going away. There's not a fix for it, right? Every kind of quick fix that you run into is usually just quick. It doesn't fix much, right? And trust me, I was a guy who wanted to fix problems all the time. Like, oh, if you got a problem, I'm going to fix it. But the issue with that is that every time you solve one, there's another one that pops up, right? It's like you're just playing whack-a-mole. And when I realized and accepted that these are the big problems that don't have solutions at all and started treating them more chronically, right? Like just nurturing them a little bit at a time. Not only did I feel better, but I started getting better results too. And I think that's important, right? You get better results when you're more centered than if you're running around and frantically being frustrated because you have too many problems to solve. Like, let go of them, stop solving so many problems and start nurturing the real problems that you have. You're going to be so much better off.
That's so true. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Yes.
Come on, Troy, let's go.
Love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Bye, everybody. See you on Amazon as well. Bye. Oh, I'm coming Friday for this. Dance your life away. It's Thursday.